Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm Jason Novetsky.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about the mental side of golf, but not as people have heard in the past. So we're going to talk a little bit about in between the shots with Jason.
Love that.
Between two shots with Jason Novetsky.
I love that.
So Jason, tell us where do you want to take us in this podcast? I think you're going to be like the mini lead in here, because you had such a great comment when we were chatting about how golfers can make and break their game in between the shots.
Yeah. So, well, first, thanks for having me on, guys. And I was talking to Jason, getting ready for this, and I said, well, let's make it a little bit different than a typical thing. We're just going to, you know, talk about pressure and all those things, and we can certainly do that. But one thing I work on with golfers a lot is what we call, you know, the space between, based on the Dave Matthews song called The Space Between. And every time I hear that song, you know, I think about golf a little bit, you know, because in golf, it isn't just the swing, you know, it's the space between the swings that a lot of people get into trouble, because the golf swing, as you know, takes a couple seconds, but the time between shots, you know, that can be minutes. And that space can be pretty dangerous because it can be unstructured if we don't work on it. So, you know, nothing's happening physically really in the space between, but a lot is happening mentally. And if, you know, a golfer hasn't trained their mind, that space itself can fill itself automatically with a lot of bad things that can get in the way. You know, replaying the last shot, you know, fear about the next one, counting up your score, judging yourself, you know, trying to fix your mechanics, as you guys well know. And just like in life, when you don't handle those gaps between stimulus and response, well, you know, that's when the tension builds and the pressure hits. So, you know, I tell golfers all the time that you don't really lose your rounds on bad shots, you lose them in the space after the bad shots. And that's where the spirals can start.
Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, I love that. And like, so let me ask you this, like, what's one or two of the biggest mistakes in between, you know, those shots that you are constantly trying to help players improve on?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with behavior between shots, right? In terms of, you know, the actions we take. You know, we get visibly frustrated, we physically do something, whether it's simple as slamming a club down, or a lot of self-deprecating language, you know, over time can really take its toll. So I think some of those are the big ones that we try to work on, where we just, you know, accept the shot as it is. And it doesn't mean you have to like the shot, you don't have to fake it, but accept it without judgment. You know, I believe is the best approach after that. And obviously this depends on, you know, the level of golfers we're talking about, right? If you're out there cracking a few pops with your buddies and it doesn't matter so much, that's fine. Go out there and have a great time and have some fun. And if you want to say some choice words about each other, go for it. But if you're a tournament golfer and you're a little bit more serious, then you definitely have to work on this, the space between.
So what would you say to Tiger's dad? Said he had 10 seconds or 10 steps or something like that to get whatever he wanted out, and then it was on to the next shot. So you mentioned slamming a club. Is that always a bad thing? Is it acceptable in some cases? Like, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I agree with the idea that you have to have some time to kind of feel it and process it. But then we have to accept it and move on.
It can't linger.
It can't linger. I mean, I always say your post-shot routine needs to have an element where you move on. So I often say, hey, when the club goes back in the bag, it's over.
So we're Dave Matthews, not the Cranberries. We're just going to see how many bands we can get into this episode.
I love it.
It's bang on. I've often talked to my students about, even mine, right? Everyone has a slightly different pre-shot or post-shot routine. But for instance, for mine, it's like, if I hit a bad golf shot, the big one is I'm going to keep my glove on and I want to process in the shot. Why did that shot happen? You know, what feedback do I need of, is that just one shot or is a pattern starting to emerge? And then after I've gathered all that data, the second that I take my glove off, that's it. I no longer care about that shot. It does not matter to me anymore. I've got what I've needed out of that shot and now I'm going to perform the next one. And that's just mine through there. Like, good shot, glove comes off right away because it's a good shot. And it's like, yeah, I'm picturing it, but that's it. Bad shots, I keep the glove on for a bit just to be like, all right, I'm locked in. The other thing too that I find frustrating, it's not quite the same, but it's like people hit bad shots, and something I gotta work on too is they don't watch the shot. They like hit the shot, they turn away, and oh, where'd my ball go? You know, like, you should be watching that, right? And then again, you're taking your feedback from that, but then once that shot's done, you've gathered your feedback, then you need some bit of process to, like, and again, that's just like your pre-shot routine, you need to practice that. Most people don't even practice their pre-shot routine, let alone their post-shot routine.
For sure.
That's right.
David Orr talks about how he wants people to watch the entire ball roll out. Even if they know they're going to miss, they know they pulled it, he wants you to watch the entire ball roll out. I ask a lot of my juniors especially, but I ask a lot of the people I teach, when does your control over the situation stop? And everyone pretty much gets the right answer, which is when the ball leaves the club face.
Yeah,
you can't do anything anymore to affect. You can yell sit or go or whatever. It doesn't have any effect, right? We can't yell loud enough for our sound waves to help the ball actually go farther, try as we might. Everyone answers that one correctly.
Yeah.
But in watching the shot and in processing the shot, that doesn't even mean you need to necessarily do something. I'm going to see if you agree with what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you need to do anything about it. You can just watch the shot, accept it, take in what happened. Doesn't mean you need to try to fix it right away or change anything right away, but you can notice maybe I'm hitting everything a little bit off the toe today. Mm-hmm. And just notice that. And your mind will probably start to make some slight alterations to things without you necessarily specifically trying to do it. Or maybe it won't. And you need to, if it's been four holes of you hitting it off the toe, maybe you say, okay, what's one little thing I can try to change to get through this round and fix it later? Is that a fair assessment? Like, you can watch the shot, give up control, you're done controlling the situation, but you can still improve later shots by just observing and processing a little bit, maybe even just in the back of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what you're doing there is you're using the shot as data and information, and then you engage your curiosity, which, you know, in an objective way, without judging yourself, to figure out what happened, learn from it, put that in your back pocket for the next one, and move on. Because, you know, you don't control what happens after that the ball leaves your club face, but you do control how you choose to respond to it.
Yeah.
I think we're always, as swing coaches here, we're always trying to help our players become better problem solvers, right? It's kind of what we're doing. We're helping them become better problem solvers. But part of the problem we also need to try to solve is, why do I react the way I react, right? Why do I react the way I react to a bad shot? I think sometimes, especially like I teach a lot of juniors, why do I also react the way I react when I hit a good shot? Because you'll see over the top reactions to good shots just as almost sometimes just as much as for some players as you'll see the overreaction for the bad shot. And, you know, would you agree that our mental approach and how we are accepting and aware is also part of a problem that we're trying to solve?
Yeah, I find it interesting. You see junior golfers react boisterously to a good shot. I don't see that very often. I see that in tennis a lot with my tennis players. They're always yelling something, come on, or something like that. But I often see a lot of golfers, when they hit good shots, just bend over and pick up the tee, so to speak, and act as if this is the way it's always supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? Because I see pros do that on TV. But we often see junior golfers react very poorly to a poor shot as well. I always find it interesting, you know, as golfers develop, because, and this is going to get to your point, Tyson, is, you know, when a kid starts to play this game, they fall in love with it like we all did, right? And we just love it. And we want to keep experiencing those feelings, or we like learning new shots or new skills, and we get into the game. But at some point, you figure out you're good at it, and then the switch flips. And now you're doing it for the other reasons. You're doing it, oh, well, maybe I can do something with this, or I can make a career out of it, or people start putting stuff in your head about it. And I think you then play golf for the wrong reasons at that point. Mm. And Dr. Gio Villani talks a lot about this as well, you know, mastery versus ego. Mm. And you switch from trying to master the game to impressing other people. And I think that's where those poor reactions come out, because you're so worried about what other people think instead of just, like Eric was saying, learning about what happened in that shot.
I was just going to say, I often will tell my juniors to that point, Doc, that like when they overreact like that, the reason they're doing that is because they want the people that they're playing with to know that they don't accept hitting bad shots, right? Like, you're not getting anything else out of it.
That's kind of my question. How much of, especially a junior golfer's reaction, is almost performative, almost like they're just trying to say to their parents, I know that was a bad shot. And they're trying to almost signal to that like, I know, you know, don't get on me about it. I already recognize it. You know, how much do you find is that?
Quite a bit. And again, that's where, you know, the work I do comes in a lot, is to help kids and parents, for that matter, in certain situations, is to let's unpack that. Let's figure out why that is. is for that particular kid or that family. You know, what kind of pressures are we putting on that young person where they have to feel like they have to perform or show people that they're angry or they get it and things like that.
Absolutely.
But adults do it too. I mean, how many times where you hit a shot and you walk back to the cart and you're like, oh yeah, this, that, and the other thing. And I didn't do this right. Or I didn't get it all. Didn't go far enough. Or, you know, I thinned it a little bit. It's like, you know, like we said earlier, nobody cares.
Yes.
Right? But you feel like you have to protect your ego.
The second part of my question, and then Jason can go, was I'm not a sports psychologist. I'm not a psychologist of any kind. But what I've learned is that our mind listens to our body, our mind, whatever. We listen to ourselves almost above all else. So if we are crap talking ourselves, that carries a lot of weight with us, with ourselves, you know. So a lot of people, I think, even if it's performative and they know kind of, they think they know deep down that they're just kind of putting on a little bit of a show, they're still telling themselves, oh, you suck. Oh, God, that was terrible. Oh, my gosh, this is not my day. Oh, I'm going to lose. They're still telling themselves those things. And that's not a good thing. Do you have a simple thing about how someone should behave after a poor shot besides just
not a good thing at all? No, we get. Yeah, I really subscribe to, there was a guy that passed away a year or two ago, Trevor Mowad. He was a performance coach. He wrote the book, It Takes What It Takes. And he coined this idea of neutral thinking, which I thought was brilliant. You don't have to be positive. You definitely don't want to be negative, but you can be neutral, which to me always meant, let's just figure out what to do. And that's, again, going back to curiosity, trying to figure things out, I think is the most fun way to play golf, is to figure it out, learn from it, instead of trying to perform for your friends. So also along the lines of Trevor Mowat, he talked about like negative self-talk is like fast food for your brain. And the more you say those things, the more unhealthy your mindset becomes. I tell my clients, you don't have to be positive. Just don't say anything. Let it pass, right? Because being positive isn't going to work in that situation. I never tell my clients to be more positive, quite honestly. And they're often looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, what do you mean? I say, well, think about it. If you're struggling and somebody says, hey, you got this, just, you know, hang in there, be positive. Is that effective?
Right.
No, because you feel like you're lying to yourself. So I say, you know what? Just don't say anything, or just be neutral and be tactical or productive or functional with the way you want to talk and behave. And to me, that's the most likely way that you're going to be successful moving forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny, Mike from Chase and Scratch posted a video of us playing a hole the other day, but he posted it and it was, I hit a bad shot. And as soon as I hit it, I knew it was going in the bunker. And I'm like, get in the bunker. That was something that I worked hard on, where I would change, because I used to be that guy that was like, oh, you're a piece of, you know, beat. I can't believe you hit that shot. You're garbage. Why are you even out here? And no one would talk to me like that, but somehow I'm okay to talk to myself like that. And so what I ended up doing is I flipped it in it. Like you talked about it being neutral. I'm just saying what's happening to the shot. I know what's going in the bunker. Get in the bunker. You know what I mean? And so I'm saying something, I'm getting it out off my chest. But again, as soon as the glove comes off, oh, I'm in the bunker and I just got to hit the next shot. Being able to talk, because I've realized that I'm a bit of a extrovert when it comes into like on the golf course, I need to talk. I need to talk through my shots. I need to be verbal. I'm under my breath. And so that helps me release from that situation. But again, it's not negative, where in the years past, it was really bad. And like you said, just change it. You can still talk. You can still say what happened to the shot. Oh man, I hit that off the toe, right? That's what happened. Like now you're verbalizing it. It's good feedback.
You described it. Yeah.
Where you're not going, oh, you're such an idiot. I can't believe you hit it off the toe. Totally two different things.
Right. There's a difference there. You know, when you watch like Jordan Spieth talks a lot after he hits his shots, right? And then, you know, his caddy just listens and lets him vent. And then they start walking and they're on to the next one. And that's just the way he is. You know, everybody hunts differently. You know, you don't have to do it a certain way. I think there are some fundamentals, though, that we don't want to continue to beat yourself up with that negative language, because it will take its toll. You know, just like learning something in the golf swing, you need repetition to get really good at it, right? Well, it also works the other way. When you are constantly negative to yourself, eventually you start to believe that. You know, the repetition of hearing those things, whether it's from yourself or anybody, a teammate or a parent, you know, if that's the case, you start to internalize that's who you are. And that, again, you know, Jason and I have talked a lot about this when we play golf, is, you know, your identity drives everything. It's your program. And it starts with that narrative that you're talking to yourself.
And would you say this, Doc, as I just sit here and listen to this conversation, that's also what makes your job kind of tough when you start to work with a new client, is, you know, we're all so different. You're dealing with, you know, so many people that have just different backgrounds, different experiences. And it's not like you're just going to say, here, do this, and you're going to go have success. Like the relationship that you're going to build with the players, it happens over time. So, you know, how difficult is it sometimes when you're working with a client from a buy-in perspective, right? Like, hey, this is important for me to keep seeing success.
Well, that's a great question, Tyson. And to me, that's what's so fun and fascinating about the work that I get to do. And I feel blessed to be able to do it. I never know what I'm going to get, you know? So if we're not going to use bands, we'll use movies. Like, you know, life's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And so, you know, everybody's different. And I find that fascinating. And I pride my work in, I don't have 5 steps to mental toughness. You know, I don't like those kind of books or sayings and things like that, because we're all individuals. We all have our own background and our stories that, you know, got us to where we ever are in that moment. And to me, that's the fun part, is trying to figure out where this individual is coming from, you know, learning, like, you know, how did you get into the game? Oh, your dad got you into that. Tell me about that story. What was it that kept you going in golf? Was it you fell in love with it, or you wanted to make your dad proud? That's completely different direction we're going to go in now. But I'll never know that if I just say, okay, well, today's step one, this is what we're going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I lose them. So in terms of buy-in, you lose them right away if you're just going to, you know, put them in a pigeonhole. So I really enjoy the process of getting to know my clients in that first session in particular. We do try to get to work right away, because I want them to walk out of the session with something tangible that they can go use. But the fun part to me is kind of digging in and figuring out what the mess is all about.
So if someone is trying to do a little bit on their own, what would be the first thing that you would tell? And obviously it's tough because you have different kinds of people doing different kinds of things for different reasons. What would be the first general step that you would ask someone to do on their own if they just want to improve the space between shots?
The space between. Okay. So we would start with some fundamentals, like I'm sure you've talked about a lot, is, you know, various routines. We would also talk about what we call performance statements that we can use in the space between as well. We have some recovery routines for poor shots and things like that. So we would jump in with simple routines that we can always go to. However, Eric, what's more important is that the client learns to recognize quickly what is going on in their mind. And we call this concept of like mental traps, things that we overthink, we ruminate about, that we get distracted by. So I have a process that I go through where we have this huge list of things that every athlete in every sport will think about, you know, other people's expectations of me, the future, the past, course conditions, how big this situation is, things like the weather, you know, whatever it is. Everybody's got their own mental traps, but what the best athletes do is they know what theirs are, and they're able to recognize them quickly and then replace that inner voice with something more productive. So we call that like being your own inner coach. And some people have a hard time with that. They've been really poor at being their own inner coach. And so in response to that, I would ask them, who's been that voice in your life that when you do need something, they're always there for you and they click? And I'll say, you know, ask yourself, well, what would that person say in this situation? You just had a double bogey. Now you just rip one, you know, almost out of bounds. You're pretty pissed off. You're frustrated. Your voice right now isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So whose voice will? And so if you're prepared with that in advance and you're, you know, tough enough to bring that up in that situation, which obviously takes practice, you know, that voice could be something that could be a nice little trick that they can use as well.
Love that.
Yeah, that's really good. If we were to ask where you should start practicing in this shots between, would it be off of the golf course? Would it be at the driving range? Would it be on a fun 9-hole, no scoring match? Where would you start?
All of the above. I mean, I think you mentioned earlier that, you know, people don't practice the routines enough at the range. So I always kind of prescribe to them, look, don't just be a raker and a bomber and hit balls like that mindlessly. You're wasting your time. So, you know, get loosened up, warm up, set up some challenges, some deliberate type practice for yourself. I know the Sims do that, but if you're outside, do it on your own. Set up some fairways in your mind, set up some greens and things like that. But after every shot, be curious, answer those questions in an objective way. What happened to that shot? What did the ball tell you? It's just information. And then go through your pre-shot routine, select your target, take a breath, visualize the shot, line up and hit it. And, you know, you don't have to do it every single shot at the range. Otherwise, you'd be there for hours and hours. But I'd say after every third or fourth ball, you should probably step back and reset and use your routine. Because if you don't practice it, it's going to feel so unnatural when you're out there on the course.
Love it.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I think, you know, people can literally practice that. We're all in cold weather environments here. A lot of people are playing in the Sims. People can practice this in the Sims. You don't just need to practice on your technique. You can also practice on some of your mental ability, even in the off season.
That's right. And there's so many things you can do at home, not even at a sim. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about the purpose of meditation and imagery and visualization and journaling and attention drills that we could be doing, not just in the off season, but all the time. You know, the old adage is, you know, how much of this game is mental and how much are you actually doing?
Yeah.
Right. We spend 99% of our time practicing the swing. No offense to you guys, but not enough time on the mental side of it. And, you know, for me, that's job security, but I wish more people would take care of that.
Yep, absolutely.
Doc, where can people find information about you and what you offer?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So I own a company called Champion Mindset Group, based in Birmingham, Michigan, just outside Detroit. My website is simple, champmindset.com. On the page, you can find all the information about the work I do and how to schedule appointments and things like that.
And you just published a book too?
I did. I published a journal. So it's, I'm into Stoicism, been in it for a long time. It's something I kind of my life philosophy as well, because I feel like, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and Epictetus were the original OG sports psychologists, you know, coming up with the dichotomy of control. And they were the originators of control, the controllables. And it's up to you how you respond to things. And events are just events until you put meaning to them. So I took a bunch of information from Stoicism and created 20 different, you know, scenarios or quotes, if you will. And they repeat every 20 pages in the journal. And then there's some questions after each quote, like, you know, how did this come up in something recently in your life, this quote? What did you do well in regards to that situation? What you could have done better and what's your plan to fix it? So, you know, there's so many different journals out there. There wasn't a whole lot combining Stoicism and athletics. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing. So it's called the Stoic Journal for Athletes, and it's on Amazon.
Love it. Well, thanks for joining us, Doc. And listen, all of you guys that are out there listening, you need to listen to this again, share this with all of your friends, and we'll see you next time.
And remember, you can find us on all social medias at thespinaccess.com.
Thanks, Doc.
Appreciate it, guys. Good to see you.